Letter number 26, 1127 AD. To the same. He excuses the brevity of his letter on the ground that Lent is a time of silence, and also that on account of his profession and his ignorance, he does not dare to assume the function of teaching. You will perhaps be angry, or, to speak more gently, will wonder that in place of a longer letter, which you had hoped for from me, you receive this brief note. But remember what says the wise man, that there is a time for all things under the heaven, both a time to speak and a time to keep silence. But when shall silence have its time, if our chatter shall occupy even these sacred days of Lent? Correspondence is more absorbing than conversation, inasmuch as it is more laborious, since when in each other's presence we may say with little labor what we will, but when absent, we require diligently to dictate in turn the words which we mutually seek, or which are sought from us. But while being absent from you, I meditate, dictate or write down what you are in time to read, where, I pray you, is the silence and the quiet of my retreat. But all these things you say, you can do in silence, yet if you think that you will not answer thus, for what a tumult there is in the mind of those who dictate, what a crowd of sentiments, variety of expressions, diversity of senses jostle, how frequently one rejects that word which presents itself and seeks another which still escapes. What close attention one gives to the consecutiveness of the line of thought and the elegance of the expression. How it can be made most plain to the intellect, how it can be made most useful to the conscience, what in short shall be put before and what after for a particular reader, and many other things do those who are careful in their style, attend to most closely. And you will say that in this I shall have quiet. Will you call this silence, even though the tongue be still? Besides, it is not only the time, but also my profession and my insufficiency, which prevent my undertaking what you desire, or being able to fulfill it. For it is not the profession of a monk, which I seem to be, or of a sinner, which I am, to teach, but to mourn for sin. An unlearned person, as I truly confess myself to be, never acts more unlearnedly than when he presumes to teach what he knows not. Therefore, to teach is the business neither of the unlearned in his rashness, nor of the monk in his boldness, nor of the penitent in his distress. It is for this reason that I have fled from the world and abide in solitude, and propose to myself with the prophet to take heed to my ways that I offend not with my tongue. Since, according to that same prophet, a man full of words shall not prosper upon the earth, and to another scripture, death and life are in the power of the tongue. But silence, says Isaiah, is the work of righteousness, and Jeremiah teaches us to wait in silence for the salvation of the Lord. Thus, to this pursuit and desire of righteousness, since righteousness is the mother, the nurse, and the guardian of all virtues, I would not seem entirely to deny what you have asked. And I invite and entreat you, and all those who, like you, desire to make progress in virtue, if not by the teaching of my words, at least by the example of my silence, to learn from me to be silent. You who press me in your words to teach what I do not know. But what am I doing? It will be wonderful if you do not smile, seeing with what a flood of words I condemn those who are too full of words. And while I desire to commend silence to you, I plead against silence of my loquacity. Our dear Jarek, concerning those penitents and whose manner of life you wish to be assured, as far as I can judge from his actions, is walking worthy of the grace of God, and bringing forth works worthy of penitence. The little book which you ask of me, I have not beside me just now. A certain friend of ours, with the same desire to read it as you, has kept it a long time. But not to frustrate altogether the desire of your piety, I send you another, which I have just completed, on the glories of the Virgin Mother, which, as I have no other copy of it, I beg that you will return to me as soon as possible, or bring it with you if you will be coming here soon. In this letter, the saint expresses in forcible words how little he felt himself inclined to write to his friends letters without necessity or usefulness, and to take time and leisure for doing so, which belonged to more important and sacred employments. Also, he felt that the labor and of literary composition interfered with the silence to which monks were bound, as also with inward quiet and peace. Bernard speaks of the function and calling of a monk like himself, for the monk as such is not called to preach and to teach, but to devote himself in solitude to God and to his own salvation through meditation and the practice of virtues. Wherefore, he says in EP 42, labor and retirement and voluntary poverty, these are the signs of the monk. These render excellent the monastic life. But if there should be anywhere lurking slothful monks who are so imprudent and rash as to abuse the authority of the saint, to the excuse of their own indolence, let such hear him accusing them in plain words. I may seem, perhaps, to say too much in disparagement of learning, as if I wish to blame the learned and prohibit the study of literature. By no means. I do not overlook how greatly her learned sons have profited and do profit the church, whether in combating her enemies or instructing the simple. This Jarek was made abbot of Igny in 1138. He is mentioned again in the following letter. Letter number 27, 1127 A.D. To the same. A sincere love has no need of lengthy letters or of many words. Bernard has been in a state of health almost despaired of, but is now recovering. I have sent you a short letter in reply to a short one from you. You have given me an example of brevity, and I willingly follow it, And truly, what need have true and lasting friendship, as you truly say, of exchanging empty and fugitive words? However great be the variety of quotations and verses, and the multiplicity of the phrases by which you have endeavored to display or to prove your friendship for me, I feel more certain of your affection than I do that you have succeeded in expressing it. And you will not be wrong if you think the same in respect to me. When your letter came into my hands, you were present in my heart, and I am quite convinced that it will be the same for me when you receive my letter, and that you, when you read it, I shall not be absent. It is a labor for each of us to scribble to the other, and for our messengers a fatigue to carry our letters from the one to the other. But the heart feels neither labor nor fatigue in loving. Let those things cease, then, which without labor cannot be carried on, and let us practice only that which, the more earnestly it is done, seems to cost the less labor. Let our minds, I say, rest from dictating, our lips from conversing, our fingers from writing, our messengers from running to and fro. But let not our hearts rest from meditating day and night on the law of the Lord, which is the law of love. The more we cease to be occupied in doing this, the less quiet shall we enjoy, and the more engrossed we are in it. So much the more calm and repose we shall feel from it. Let us love and be loved, striving to benefit ourselves in the other, and the other in ourselves. For those whom we love, on those do we rely, as those who love us rely in turn on us. Thus to love in God is to love charity, and therefore it is to labor for charity, to strive to be loved for the sake of God. But what am I doing? I promised brevity, and I am sliding into prolixity. If you desire news of Brother Jerick, or rather, since you do so, he so runs not as uncertainly, so fights not as one that beateth the air. But since he knows that salvation depends not on him who fights, nor on him who runs, but on God who shows mercy, he begs that he may have the help of your prayers for him, so that he who has already granted to him both to fight and to run may grant also to overcome and to attain. Salute for me with my heart and by your mouth your abbot, who is most dear to me, not only on your account, but also because of his high character. It will be most agreeable to me to see him at the time and place which you have promised. I do not wish to leave you ignorant that the hand of God has for a little while been laid heavily upon me. It seemed that I had been stricken to the fall, that the axe had been laid to the root of the barren tree of my body, and I feared that I might be instantly cut down. But lo, by your prayers and those of my other friends, the good Lord has spared me this time also, yet in the hope that I shall bear good fruits in the future. This kind of correspondence is a hindrance to devotion and the spirit of prayer, as he says in the letter placed at the head of his apology addressed to Abbot William, and also in letter 89. Letter number 28, 1130 AD, to the abbots assembled at Soissons. Bernard urges the abbots zealously to perform the duty for which they had met. He recommends to them a great desire of spiritual progress and begs them not to be delayed in their work if lukewarm and lax persons should perhaps murmur. To the reverend abbots met in the name of the Lord in chapter at Soissons, Brother Bernard, Abbot of Clairvaux, the servant of their holiness, health and prayer that they may see, establish, and observe the things which are right. I greatly regret that my occupations prevent me from being present at your meeting, at least in body. For neither distance nor a crowd of cares are able to banish my spirit, which prays for you. It feels with you and rests among you. No, I repeat, I cannot be wanting in the assembly of the saints, nor can distance of place nor absence of body altogether separate me from the congregation and the counsels of the righteous, in which not the traditions of men are obstinately upheld or superstitiously observed, but diligent and humble inquiry is made what is the good and the acceptable and the perfect will of God. All my desires carry me where you are. I am with you by devotion, by friendship, by similarity of sentiment, and partaking of your zeal. That those who now applaud you may not hereafter ridicule you as having assembled to no purpose, which God forbid, strive. I beseech you to make your conduct holy and your resolutions good, for too good they cannot be. Grant that you may be too just or even too wise. Yet it is plain that you cannot be good beyond measure. And indeed, I read, do not carry justice to excess. I read, be not wiser than is befitting. But is it ever said, do not carry goodness to excess, or take care not to be too good? No one can be more good than it behooves him to be. Paul was a good man, and yet he was not at all content with his state. He reached forward gladly to the things that were before, forgetting those that were behind, and striving to become continually better than himself. It is only God who does not desire to become better than he is, because that is not possible. Let those depart both from me and from you who say, we do not desire to be better than our fathers, declaring themselves to be the sons of lukewarm and lax persons, whose memory is an execration, since they have eaten sour grapes and their children's teeth are set on edge. Or if they pretend that their fathers were holy men whose memory is blessed, let them imitate their sanctity and not defend, as laws instituted by them, the indulgences and dispensations which they have merely endured. Although holy Elias says, I am not better than my fathers, yet he has not said that he did not wish to be. Jacob saw upon the ladder angels ascending and descending, but was any one of them either sitting or standing still? It was not for angels to stand still, on the uncertain rounds of a frail ladder, nor can anything remain fixed in the same condition during the uncertain period of this mortal life. Here have we no continuing city, nor do we yet possess, but always seek for that which is to come. Of necessity you either ascend or descend, and if you try to stand still, you cannot but fall. It may be held as certain that the man is not good at all who does not wish to be better, and where you begin not to care to make advance in goodness, there also you leave off being good. Let those depart both from me and from you who call good evil and evil good. If they call the pursuit of righteousness evil, what good thing will be good in their eyes? The Lord once spoke a single word, and the Pharisees were scandalized. But now these new Pharisees are scandalized not even at a word, but at silence. You plainly see, then, that they seek only the occasion to attack you. But leave them alone. They be blind leaders of the blind. Take thought for the salvation of the little ones, not of the murmurs of the evil disposed. Why do you so much fear to give scandal to those who are not to be cured unless you become sick with them? It is not even desirable to wait to see whether your resolutions are pleasing to all of you in all respects. Otherwise you will determine upon little or no good. You ought to consult not the views, but the needs of all, and faithfully to draw them toward God, even although they be unwilling, rather than abandon them to the desires of their heart. I commend myself to your holy prayers. Letter number 29, 1132 A.D. to Henry, King of England. He asked the king's favor to the monks sent by him to construct a monastery. To the illustrious Henry, King of England, Bernard, Abbot of Clairvaux, that he may faithfully serve and humbly obey the King of Heaven in his earthly kingdom. There is in your land a property belonging to your Lord and mine, for which he preferred to die rather than it should be lost. This I have formed a plan for recovering, and I am sending a party of my brave followers to seek, recover, and hold it with strong hand, if this does not displease you. And these scouts whom you see before you, I have sent beforehand on this business to investigate wisely the state of things and bring me faithful word again. Be so kind as to assist them as messengers of your Lord, and in their persons fulfill your feudal duty to him. I pray him to render you in return happy and illustrious, to his honor and to the salvation of your soul, to the safety and the peace of your country, and to continue to you happiness and contentment to the end of your days. The history of the Abbey of Wells in England explains to us what is meant by these words of Bernard. The Abbot of Clairvaux, Bernard, had sent detachments of his army of invasion to take possession of the most distant regions. They won brilliant triumphs over the ancient enemy of salvation, bearing from him his prey and restoring it to its true sovereign. God had inspired him with the thought of sending some hopeful slips from his noble vine of Clairvaux into the English land, that he might have fruit among that nation, as in the rest of the world. The very letter is yet extant which he wrote for these religious to the king, in which he said that there was a property of the Lord in that land of the king, and that he had sent brave men out of his army to seek it, seize it, and bring it back to its owner. He persuades the king to render assistance to his messengers, and not to fail to fulfill in this his duty to his suzerain, which was done. The religious from Clairvaux were received with honor by the king and by the realm, and they laid new foundations in the province of York, founding the Abbey of Reval. And this was the first planting of the Cistercian order in the province of York. Letter number 30, 1132 A.D. to Henry, Bishop of Winchester. Bernard salutes him very respectfully. To the very illustrious Lord Henry, by the grace of God, Bishop of Winchester, Bernard, Abbot of Clairvaux, health in our Lord. It is with great joy that I have learned from the report of many persons that so humble a person as myself has found favor with your highness. I am not worthy of it, but I am not ungrateful for it. I return you, therefore, thanks for your goodness, a very unworthy return, but all that I am able to make. I do not fear but that you will receive the humble return that I make, since you have been so kind as to forestall me by your affection and the honor that you have done to me. But I defer writing more until I shall know by some token from your hand, if you think fit to send one, how you receive these few words. You may easily confine your reply in writing or by word of mouth, if it shall so please you, to Abbot Ogier, who is charged to convey to you this note. I beg your excellency also to be so good as to honor that religious with your esteem and confidence, inasmuch as he is a man commendable for his honor, knowledge, and piety. Letter number 31, 1132 A.D. to the abbot of a certain monastery at York, from which the prior had departed, taking several religious with him. You write to me from beyond the sea, to ask of me advice which I should have preferred that you had sought from some other. I am held between two difficulties, for if I do not reply to you, you may take my silence for a sign of contempt. But if I do reply, I cannot avoid danger, since whatever I reply, I must of necessity either give scandal to someone or give to some other a security which they ought not to have, or at all events more than they ought to have. That your brethren have departed from you was not with the knowledge nor by the advice or persuasion of me or of my brethren, but I incline to believe that it was of God, since their purpose could not be shaken by all your efforts, and that the brethren themselves thought this also, who so earnestly sought my advice about themselves. their conscience troubling them, as I suppose, because they quitted you. Otherwise, if their conscience, like that of the apostle, did not reproach them, their peace would not have been disturbed. But what can I do that I may be hurtful to no one, neither by my silence nor by my reply to the questions asked me? Thus perhaps I may relieve myself of the difficulty if I shall send those who question me to a person more learned and whose authority is more reverend and sacred than mine. Pope Gregory says in his book on the Pastoral Rule, "Whosoever has proposed to himself a greater good does an unlawful thing in subordinating it to a lesser good." And he proves this by a citation from the Gospel, saying, "No one putting his hands to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God." And he proceeds, "He who renounces a more perfect state, which he has embraced, to follow another which is less so, is precisely the man who looks back." The same Pope, in his third homily on Ezekiel, adds, "There are people who taste virtue, set themselves to practice it, and while doing so, contemplate undertaking actions still better, but afterwards, drawing back, abandon those better things which they had proposed to themselves. They do not, it is true, leave off the good practices they had begun, but they fail to realize those better ones which they had meditated. To human judgment, these seem to stand fast in the good work, but to the eyes of Almighty God, they have fallen and failed in what they contemplated. Here is a mirror. In it, let your religious consider not the features of their faces, but the fact of their turning back. Here, let them determine and distinguish their motives, their thoughts, accusing or excusing them with that sentence which the spiritual man passes who judges all things and is himself judged by no one. I, indeed, cannot rashly determine whether the state which they have left or that which they have embraced was the greater or less, the higher or the lower, the severer or the more lax. Let them judge according to the rule of Saint Gregory. But to you, Reverend Father, I declare with as much positive assurance as plain truth that it is not at all desirable that you should set yourself to quench the Spirit. Hinder not him, it is said, who is able to do good, but if thou canst, do good also thyself. It more befits you to be proud of the good works of your sons, since a wise son is the glory of his father. For the rest, let no one make it a cause of complaint against me, that I have not hidden in my heart the righteousness of God, unless, perhaps, I have spoken less of it than I ought, for the sake of avoiding scandal." Letter number 32, 1132 AD, to Thurston, Archbishop of York. Bernard praises his charity and beneficence towards the religious. "To the very dear Father and Reverend Lord Thurston, by the grace of God, Archbishop of York, Bernard, Abbot of Clairvaux, wishes the fullest health. The general good report of men, as I have experienced, has said nothing in your favor, which the splendor of your good works does not justify. Your actions, in fact, show that your high reputation, which fame had previously spread everywhere, was neither false nor ill-founded, but manifest and certain. Especially of late, how brilliantly has your zeal for righteousness and your sacerdotal energy shone forth in the defense of the poor religious, who had no other helper. Once, indeed, the whole assembly of the saints used to venerate your works of mercy and alms deeds, but in doing so, it narrated always what is common to you with very many, since whosoever possesses the goods of this world is bound to share them with the poor. But this is your episcopal task. This is the noble proof of your paternal affection. This is your truly divine fervor, the zeal which no doubt has inspired and aroused in you, who makes his angels spirits and his ministers a flaming fire. This, I say, belongs entirely to you. It is the ornament of your dignity, the badge of your office, the adornment of your crown. It is one thing to fill the belly of the hungry, and quite another thing to have a zeal for holy poverty. The one serves nature, the other grace. Thou shalt visit thy kind, he says, and thou shalt not sin. Therefore, he who nourishes the flesh of another sin it not in so doing, but he who honors the sanctity of another does good to his own soul. Therefore, he says again, keep your alms in your own hand until you shall find a righteous man to whom to give it. For what advantage? Because he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. Let us then discharge the debt that nature requires of us, that we may avoid sin, but let us be co-workers with grace, that we may merit to become sharers of it. It is this that I so admire in you, as I acknowledge that it was given to you from above. O Father, truly reverend and to be regarded with the sincerest affection, the praise for what you have laid out of your temporal means to the relief of our necessities will be blended with the praises of God forever. What Thurston did for the protection of these monks who had taken refuge with him in the desire to embrace a more austere life may be seen in a letter from him which we have taken from the Monastics Angelicum and placed after those of Saint Bernard. Letter number 33, 1132 AD, to Richard, Abbot of Fountains, and his companions who had passed over to the Cistercian order from another. His praises them for the renewal of holy discipline. How marvelous are those things which I have heard and learned, and which the two Geoffreys have announced to me, that you have become newly fervent with the fire from on high, that from weakness you have become strong, that you have flourished again with new sanctity. This is the finger of God, secretly working, softly renewing, healthfully changing not, indeed, bad men into good, but making good men better. Who will grant unto me to cross over to you and see this great sight? For that progress in holiness is not less wonderful or less delightful than that conversation. It is much more easy, in fact, to find many men of the world converted to good than one religious who is good becoming better than he is. The rarest bird in the world is the monk who ascends ever so little from the point which he has once reached in the religious life. Thus the spectacle which you present, dearest brethren, is the more rare and salutary, not only to men who desire greatly to be the helper of your sanctity, but it rightly rejoices the whole Church of God as well. Since the rarer it is, the more glorious it is also, for prudent made it a duty to you to pass beyond that mediocrity so dangerously near to defect, and to escape from that lukewarmness which provokes God to reject you. It was even a duty of conscience for you to do so, since you know that it is not safe for men who have embraced the holy rule to halt before having attained the goal to which it leads. I am exceedingly grieved that I am obliged, by the pressing obligations of the day and the haste of the messenger, to express the fullness of my affection with a pen so brief, and to comprise the breadth of my kindness for you within the narrow limits of this billet. But if anything is wanting, Brother Geoffrey will supply it by word of mouth. This Geoffrey, O holy and religious man, who founded or reformed numerous monasteries, had been sent by Bernard to Fountains to train them according to the rule of the Cistercian order. Letter number 34, 1130 A.D. Hildebert, Archbishop of Tours, to the Abbot Bernard. The reputation of Bernard for sanctity induces Hildebert to write to him and ask for his friendship. Few, I believe, are ignorant that balsam is also, by its scent, the tree by its fruit. So, dearly beloved brother, there has reached even to me the report of you, how you are steadfast in holiness and sound in doctrine. For though I am far separated from you by distance of place, yet the report has come even to me. What pleasant nights you spend with your Rachel! How abundant an offspring is born to you of late! How you show yourself wholly a follower of virtue and an enemy of the flesh. Whoever speaks to me of you has this one tale to tell. Such is the perfume of your name, like that of balm poured out. Such are already the rewards of your merit. These are the ears that you are gathering from your field before the last great harvest. For in this life Some reward of virtue is to be found in the notable and the undying tribute paid to it. This it wins unaided and keeps unaided. Its renown is not diminished by envy, nor increased by the favor of men. As the esteem of good men cannot be taken away by false accusations, so it cannot be won by the attentions of flattery. It rests with the individual himself either to advance that esteem by fruitfulness in virtue, or to detract from it by deficiency. The whole church, I am quite sure, hopes that your renown will be forever sustained, since it is believed to be founded upon a strong rock. As for me, having heard this report of you everywhere, with desire I have desired to be received into the inmost shrine of your friendship, and to be held in remembrance in your prayers when steeling yourself from converse with mortals. You speak on behalf of mortals to the King of Angels. Now this is my desire, was much increased by Jebun, Archdeacon of Troyes, a man eminent as well for his piety as for his learning. I should have thought it my duty to commend him to you, if I were not sure that those whom you deem worthy of your favor need no further commendation. I wish, however, that you should know that it was through his information I learnt that you are in the church, one who art fit to be a teacher of virtue, both by precept and example. But not to burden you with too long a letter, I'd bring my writing to an end. Though end the above petition, I will not until I have the happiness to obtain what I have asked. I beg you to tell me by a letter, in reply, how you are disposed with regard to it.